The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. It is a Wednesday. Welcome to it. I'm Nicole Sandler. Coming to you live here at NicoleSandler.com on the Progressive Voices Network, streaming video on Facebook Live, Twitch, Periscope, and still suspended from YouTube. But I guess I'm in company. I just read this morning that Hal Sparks is also suspended from streaming on YouTube. Go figure. To the people on the chat room at NicoleSandler.com, I'm really sorry. I forgot to post the... I usually embed the Facebook Live stream onto the chat page, and I spaced out on it today. So pardon my my missing that. But you can find this program, should you care to watch video, for those who like to watch, as I always say. We are on periscope.tv/Nicole Sandler, twitch.tv/Nicole Sandler Show, and Facebook Live, The Nicole Sandler Show. So if you really want to watch video, you can. If you want the audio, there's always the Progressive Voices Network, of course. And the easy way to get my audio stream is just NicoleSandlerStream.com. It just goes right to the player. All right. Now that I got that out of the way, oh my God. Yesterday, we told you about... with all this week, we've been talking about the shooting of another unarmed black man, this time in Wisconsin, right? In Kenosha, Wisconsin. And it's horrific. What has been happening since Jacob Black was shot 7 times in the back? We now know the latest on him is, thankfully, he's not dead, which is shocking, considering we saw the video. He was shot 7 times point blank in the back. In the back, the cop who shot him grabbed onto his white T-shirt, held onto it as Jacob was getting into the car with, by the way, his 3 young children sitting in the back seat, when this cop opened fire, shooting 7 times. So it's a miracle that he's only paralyzed and not dead. But that's what it is. He is paralyzed, and chances are he'll never walk again. And then, so I awaken this morning to go on the, I go online, I read news because I do my What's News segment, right? I write and produce a 6-minute newscast that runs throughout the day on the Progressive Voices Network. So I start my my research very early in the morning. And this morning I went on Twitter and I found video. That's when I first heard about what happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin overnight last night. And much to my disgust, I saw again, there were fires set, there was violence. 2 people were killed. And of course, the media portrays it as those protesters are rioting again. Now, I do agree that this gives Donald Trump, you know, he loves this. This is what he wants. He wants to see violence in the streets. He wants to see, you know, cars and houses and buildings and businesses set on fire because it helps advance his narrative that those radical Democrats, they're doing this horrible stuff. Well, it's not the Democrats and it's not the protesters. In fact, there were a number of, there's so many videos that came out from last night. And in one of them, you actually hear the somebody screaming at a group of the Black Lives Matter protesters, "What are you doing? Why are you doing this?" And you hear a woman saying, "They're not with us. They're not with us." There are agents provocateur at every one of these protests. These are the people who are staying out. you know, for the most part, after the curfew and engaging with law enforcement. I'm using that umbrella term for a moment, and turning things ugly. But what I quickly surmised this morning after reading a whole bunch of stuff online and watching a bunch of videos is that there was this Kenosha militia, as they called themselves. In fact, they posted basically a call to arms on InfoWars and on 4chan and other places like that, saying, come out to Kenosha tonight. We need to protect our property. And, you know, like that. And people did. Go figure. They did. One of them was a 17-year-old boy. A boy who thinks he's a man because he's got a big gun. Now, I will not say this boy's name, but it became apparent after watching the videos online that this boy, this 17-year-old boy, is a murderer because we saw the video of him doing it. Then we saw him walking away on his cell phone after shooting a man in the head and into his phone saying, I just killed someone. I don't know if I have that here somewhere. I do. I've got all kinds of stuff. All right. Somebody's calling. I don't know who it is, but I guess let's find out. Hi, who's this? Hello? Hello? I guess whoever was there is not there. If you're going to call in, then, you know, you need to talk to me. All right. So, let's see. I actually want to close Skype out on this computer. It shouldn't be open on this computer. You know, if you do want to call, that's fine. Go ahead. Try to call. If you've got something, you know, important to say, I'm happy to take your calls. In fact, I want to know where you are on this. Bottom line. So this morning we knew that the 17-year-old thug, was the shooter. He killed two people. We also found out that this 17-year-old thug then walked towards the police who were speeding towards him with his hands up, and the police told him, get out of the way, get out of the way. They did. You know what? I wonder. I have one video that I'm hesitant to play because the person who shot it said something like, DM me for a license to air. Yeah, the last thing I need is another copyright violation. So let me play this other video for you. Now, if you're watching on any of the streaming services on Facebook Live or Twitch or what's the other one? Facebook, Twitch, Periscope, you'll see the video. If you're not, I will describe to you what's going on in this video. It runs like a minute and a half or so. So let me play it for you here. So what we see is are people running down the street. This was shot by @BG on the scene on Twitter. So we're seeing people running. We're seeing somebody on the ground. Somebody was knocked to the ground and he picks up the gun and starts shooting at people. Shooting at people. The person who's shooting at the people is that 17-year-old thug. And you hear all the gunshots. This is astounding. This is in Kenosha, Wisconsin, last night. And who's ever shooting the video is still shooting the video. And there's the guy with the gun just calmly walking down the street. And you hear the sirens coming towards them. Oh, here's the guy. Okay, he's wearing a green shirt. He's sort of running, like jogging. And walking towards the police, putting his hands in the air, like, you know, hands up, don't shoot.
Hey, dude right here just shot them.
And people are screaming, the dude right here just shot them. And the cops go past him, and in just a moment, you'll see, they tell him to get out of the way. Here he is with his hands up, and the police are driving right past him. He's a white guy with a long gun with his hands up. Get out of the way, they're screaming.
Get down there! God damn it!
Oh my God. So the cops are yelling at him, get out of the street. Get out of the way. He's got his hands up. He just murdered two people and critically injured a third. And the cops are thinking, oh, he's a white guy. He can't possibly be the shooter. Earlier, we learned that, here, I'm going to play you another video. This one shot by, I guess, the Rundown Live, because they have their little bug in the corner. But here, I'm going to set it up and tell you what you're going to be hearing, is this group of white militia guys armed to the teeth who are hanging out by, I don't know, it's a gas station or a garage or something. And the cops come by and thank them for being there. And then the cops give them water. Seriously, they gave them bottled water and thanked them for their support. By the way, one of the people who walked up to the cops to get a bottle of water was the 17-year-old shooter. I kid you not.
If you can keep people from pointing their guns at the crowd,
yeah, no laser pointers either. No laser pointers. They think that's guns too.
So these are the militia people talking amongst themselves.
Way back by the gas station again.
Hey, thank you, gas station. Need water? There's a guy far right. You need water?
Now you hear the cops.
Thank you. All right, come on, guys. Let's get out of here.
And there's the shooter walking up to the cops.
Thank you.
And they said, thank you.
Yes, you. You are a civilian. Your area is closed to them. You're trespassing. Leave. Leave now.
Leave now. And then...
We got a couple.
Oh, we got a couple.
Save a couple, but we'll give you a couple.
Bottles of water. We'll give you a couple.
We appreciate you guys. We really do.
We appreciate you guys, he said. The cop said, we appreciate you guys. We really do. Why? Because they were white and armed? You appreciate them, huh? Well, it wasn't enough that this 17-year-old murderer walks up to the police cars with his hands raised, with a long gun slung over his shoulder after having just shot three people. And they say, get out of the way, get out of the way. They did nothing. This guy goes home to Antioch, Illinois. No, he doesn't live in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He lives in Antioch, Illinois, where this morning, or this afternoon, he was arrested. Yes. So, okay, so now he's arrested because it's clear from the video we've seen all over the internet that this guy shot and killed two people. He was not a Black Lives Matter protester. In fact, he went out there earlier and said on video, someone said, oh, you're here with... a non-lethal weapon. He said, no, there's nothing non-lethal about what we have. We're ready. He was ready to kill somebody. So after the kid, and again, I'm not going to say his name, is arrested in Antioch, Illinois, the police chief of Kenosha, Wisconsin has a press conference today. And I want to play for you how the chief of police announced the arrest of this murderer. You ready for this?
Persons were shot. Everybody involved was out after the curfew. I'm not going to make a great deal of that, but the point is the curfew's in place to protect. Had persons not been out involved in violation of that, perhaps the situation that unfolded would not have happened.
Okay, so first, he's blaming the people who are out after the curfew. So if they weren't out after the curfew, this never would have happened. So, of course, it's their fault. Unbelievable. But he continues. What about the killer?
So the last night, a 17-year-old individual from Antioch, Illinois, was involved in the use of firearms to resolve whatever conflict was in place. The result of it.
Wait a minute. The 17-year-old from Antioch, Illinois, used a firearm to resolve whatever conflict was taking place? Excuse me?
The result of it was two people are dead.
He killed two people. You don't say he used the firearm to rectify the situation. That is disgusting. I watched that press conference live and could not believe what I was hearing. Unfucking believable. Kenosha County Sheriff David Beth acknowledged these militia people. He acknowledged their presence in an interview with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, but said he wasn't sure if the suspected shooter was affiliated with them. They were! Your officers gave him water and thanked him for being there. I'm just blown away. And today, we're being scolded. We're being told that watch out because Donald Trump is going to use this because he's what they're doing at this convention and what Trump does every day of his life is try to scare people into submission, make you scared enough so you'll vote for him. And, you know, you got to be scared that your cities are burning. The cities are burning because your fucking cops keep shooting unarmed black people. What don't you understand? Train your police officers better or disarm them because they obviously can't handle the firepower. I'm just sick over this, as should we all be. And Joe Biden's out with a video today. I'm not going to play it, but he's like, the rioting has got to stop. Don Lemon on CNN. The rioting has got to stop. Absolutely, the rioting has got to stop. The killing of unarmed black people has got to stop. The police brutality has got to stop. This is not a one-sided thing. And frankly, the protesters have been peaceful. What's happening, though, is God forbid somebody stays out past curfew. That's when the violence begins, and it's usually on the behalf of law enforcement first, and unless there's, you know, a Kenosha militia getting involved with the gratitude of the police for being there. And now we learn that Donald Trump is sending reinforcements, federal reinforcements, to Kenosha tonight. Anyone among us think this is not going to end well? This is not the way to fix the problem. I'm stunned. And apparently, Wisconsin's governor, Tony Evers, a Democrat, accepted Donald Trump's offer of assistance. Really? Really? I guess he doesn't want things to get better. I'm just sickened. Meanwhile, Jacob Blake's father, Jacob Blake Sr., and his mother, Julia Jackson, both spoke before the cameras yesterday. And it was heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking. Here they are. All right, this is a little bit of what they had to say.
He shot my son 7 times. 7 times.
7 times.
Like he didn't matter. But my son matters. He's a human being, and he matters.
Clearly, you can see by now that I have beautiful brown skin. But take a look at your hand. And whatever shade it is beautiful as well. How dare we hate what we are? We are humans. God did not make one type of tree or flower or fish or horse or grass or rock. How dare you ask him to make one type of human that looks just like you?
Wow.
I'm not talking to just Caucasian people. I am talking to everyone. White, black, Japanese, Chinese, red, brown. No one is superior to the other.
She went on for quite a while, and I was amazed at her poise and her composure, because if it was my kid who had just been shot in the back 7 times, or that was his mother. Yes. His father and his mother spoke there. I can't even imagine. And yet the idiots on the right are pointing the fingers at us like we're doing something wrong. People out in the street protesting like they're doing something wrong. No, that is our constitutional right to get out there and protest. It's nobody's right to shoot somebody, an unarmed person, and for this 17-year-old white privileged piece of shit to cross state lines carrying an assault rifle with the intent, I guess, of killing some bad people in his eyes. Yeah, it's just stunning. It's just absolutely stunning. Oh, man. I'm beyond, if he couldn't tell, I'm beyond, I don't know what the word is. Yes, I'm angry. I'm frustrated. I'm terrified. Because it seems like this is all going according to Donald Trump's plan. My God. You know, I have some funnies here queued up, but I'm kind of not in the mood. I'm not in the mood to laugh. You know, we have Tom Hartman coming up in a little while. I guess I should launch into some of what happened at the shit show last night. Oh, I'm sorry. The Republican National Convention last night. Did you watch it? Oh, before we get to that, yeah, duh, because there's not enough horrific stuff going on. Hurricane Laura has now been upgraded to Category 4 as the National Hurricane Center is warning of, quote, unsurvivable storm surge. Unsurvivable? And I live in Florida, and I've been under hurricane watch many, many, many times. And I don't think I've ever heard that term before. Hurricane Laura has continued to rapidly intensify, reaching Category 4 on the wind scale with peak winds of 140 miles per hour. The storm is predicted to make landfall late tonight, early tomorrow, near the Texas-Louisiana border. The National Hurricane Center has warned of an unsurvivable 15 to 20-foot storm surge above normally dry land just to the east of where it comes ashore. They say in that area, the storm surge of 12 to 13 feet floods everything in sight. They're talking 15 to 20 feet, and they're calling it unsurvivable. Oh, and now someone else is calling. So let's, all right, let's see who this is. Hi, who's this?
Hi, my name is Pat.
It's Pat? Hi, Pat. Where are you calling from?
Albuquerque.
Albuquerque. All right. What's happening in Albuquerque now?
Well, I don't know about Albuquerque, but I was just calling about your show. You might remember me at Foro, let's say. I just don't understand.
Oh, you're the guy who threatened me, aren't you? You're the guy who threatened me. What is your problem? Why are you calling me?
So I'm a liberal, 50 years old, intelligent.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And?
Yeah, you should stay on the line. It might be helpful to your show. Okay?
I should stay on the line. It might be helpful to my show. What is your point, sir? You called me and threatened me to the point where I called the police on you. What do you have to say to me?
What I have to say to you is I didn't threaten you, but your follow-up, your adoption of this daughter should be revoked. You're the most foul.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. Goodbye. I got more important things to do. I do have his phone number, by the way. That's the second time he's called me and he has threatened me. He didn't threaten now, but, you know, just saying. 505-400-7400 if anyone's interested. His name is Pat.
Let me talk to that. No,
I hung up on him.
Let me talk to that asshole.
I hung up on him. Okay. Allison, go away, please. All right. You know what? Let's take a break because that was disconcerting. 505-400-7400 is the number should you care to call Pat. All right. Take a time out and come back on the other side and talk to Tom Hartman. Okay. And maybe that'll chill me out a little bit, although I doubt it. We'll be right back. All right. While Progressive Voices is in spots, let me play for you the latest offering from our friends at Midas Touch.
The CDC says older people are at an increased risk of death from coronavirus.
The response by this administration couldn't have been worse. This president lacks every conceivable quality necessary for leadership in a crisis.
It did not have to be like this in the United States of America.
They are dying. That's true. It is what it is.
Midas Touch is responsible for the content of this advertising.
In 1917, they say, right, the great pandemic certainly was a terrible thing where they lost anywhere from 50 to 100 million people.
It was the Spanish flu, and it
probably
was 1918.
The Second World War. All the soldiers were sick.
The Second World War?
It was a terrible situation, and this is highly contagious.
Our country's been going under since 2016. This president's been a blunder. We protest and quarantine. If you want to save our nation, here's something that you can do to rid this abomination. In November, please vote blue. Vote for Joe B. Vote for Joe B. Save us the drama. Worked with Obama as his VP. Without him, our future's looking grim. We can't take four more years of him. Trump, we will veto. Vote out the Cheeto. Vote for Joe B. Aha! While we're suffering a pandemic, he's binging on Fox and Friends while enforcing our systemic racism that never ends. I know things have sucked since Kobe, but now's not the time to mope. Joe's our Obi-Wan Kenobi. Save us, you're our only hope. Vote for Joe B. Vote for Joe B. Though not my first pick, he's not the worst dick. Hope you agree. Though not as left as I had wished, rather have him than Putin's bitch. No more collusion, no more confusion. Vote for Joe B. Vote for Joe B.
Vote for Joe B.
Vote for Joe B.
Vote for Joe B.
Instead of bailing, you better mail in. Do it for me. These debates gonna be intense. Kamala will destroy Mike Pence. Trump will just stutter.
Grab the popcorn and butter.
Vote for Joe B.
So what has Trump done that's bad?
He's normalized bigotry, said racist things. He cheated with Russia, also his rings. And he botched response to COVID in March. And thousands have died since then.
Thanks.
He silences the media if they don't agree. He stumbles and lies to us on TV. He listens to Fox and he's dumb as rocks. We can't vote him in again.
United, we can and will overcome this season of darkness in America. So it's with great honor and humility I accept this nomination for President of the United States of America.
Yeah, vote for Joe B. Vote for Joe B. We'll come back like Rocky. Please don't get cocky like Hillary. Though he is leading in the polls, better not lose sight of our goals. Get in that booth and vote for the truth and vote for Joe B. Press on that button, vote out the glutton, vote for Joe B. Don't vote third party or you'll be sorry. Don't write in Bernie, vote the attorney. I'll say with passion, vote out the fascist, vote for Joe B. If you don't vote for him, we're all gonna die. Don't write in.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on the Progressive Voices Network and NicoleSandler.com.
Okay, needed that little palate cleanser in there. And we are back. Just a funny for the day. I'll post that video on the blog at NicoleSandler.com, another cute homemade humor video. I'm thrilled once again to welcome back to the program my friend and colleague, Tom Hartman, who's got another in his series of hidden history books. This one is The Hidden History of Monopolies. Hi, Tom Hartman. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Nicole. It's great to see you again.
Always great to see you and nice to actually see you. Technology just keeps improving. It's the one sort of silver lining of the one of the silver linings of the pandemic is that everyone's now on Zoom. So it's easier to bring video into these old-time radio shows and bring them up to date. So is this number four in your Hidden History series? I think it is.
So,
you had guns and the Second Amendment, the Supreme Court and the betrayal of America, the war on voting, and this is number four, monopolies. By the way, did you coordinate with David Dayen?
No.
Oh, because he's got a book out on Monopoly. It's very good, and you guys compliment each other. You should definitely check it out and have him on your show because he's always great. So, before we get into monopolies and what has happened to the corporation in America, I want to ask about the hidden history. You know, you bring out stories in these books, and they're small books. They're easy to read. They're quick, and they're in your voice. So, you know, people like me who listen to you can hear your voice in the written word, but all your books are like that. Why is so much of our history hidden, as you put it? Why are there stories that you have to do this research to tell us about?
Well, largely because it's in the interests of wealthy and powerful people to have particular stories well known and other stories not as well known. For example, the Boston Tea Party. Mm. You know, this is what birthed America. And most Americans think that it was the result of the colonists getting, you know, upset that the British were taxing tea coming into the colonies. And it was actually the exact opposite of that. There was a recession in 1770. The British Tea Company was in big trouble. They pay tax on their tea when they took it into inventory. So when they took a million pounds of tea in from India, they would pay the tax then, and then, you know, they would sell it and get the revenue from it. And so, you know, they petitioned the British government for relief and got a complete tax rebate on millions of pounds of tea that they had in inventory, which allowed them to undercut the tea shops and tea sellers in the colonies and pull a Walmart, you know, just come in and wipe them out. And that's what upset the colonists. And that's what led to the Boston Tea Party in the fall of 1773, which, you know, then produced the Boston Ports Act, you know, and then the retaliation and the shot heard around the world and the Declaration of Independence, the American Revolution. And right. So our country was birthed in a revolt against monopoly. Very simple.
Wow. And so the fight against monopolies goes back to the beginning. By the way, I should mention the foreword to the book is written by Ralph Nader, and it's really good. Did you ask him to write the foreword to the book, or how does something like that come about?
Yeah, I've known Ralph for years. Uh-huh. I sent him a copy of the book and said, you know, what do you think? Would you be interested in writing a blurb or a foreword for it? And he read the book and, well, you can read what he said, you know, that he thought this was the most important book in a generation on this topic. And he's written books on the topic.
Yes, he has. And he said, we plan to see that Hartman's book is required reading by as many members of Congress as possible. That's a good idea. Would the publisher maybe send one to each of the 435 members or make it available on PDF or something to get it in their hands?
I've never known that to work. You know, Bernie, I had a book in 2012 that was titled Rebooting the American Dream, and Bernie wrote a letter, and Bernie loved it, and he wrote a letter. It was like 12 policy prescriptions, basically the progressive agenda. Bernie wrote a letter to all 99 of his colleagues in the Senate, and one of my staff people hand-delivered a book along with that cover letter signed by Bernie to each one of them.
Wow.
We never heard any feedback from any of them. So, I being one of those people who gets a lot of stuff in the mail, particularly from publishers, I understand, but I just don't know how to make that happen. But it's a great sentiment.
It is. It absolutely is. So, Tom Hartman, you've been talking about corporations and monopolies for as long as I've been listening to you. In fact, it was from you many years ago that I learned that back in the olden days, corporations were given the charter, I guess, to operate only if they could prove that they were operating in the public interest. It reminds me of broadcasting. Remember broadcast licenses? You used to have to prove that your station was operating in the public interest, convenience, and necessity. It was ascertainment that a station manager had to do every year or every time the license was up for renewal. Well, corporations were the same way. They had to prove that they were good corporate citizens in order to get their corporation approved to continue? I know I'm using the wrong vernacular here.
No, you're absolutely right. And you know, Reagan blew that up in 1987 when he stopped enforcing the Fairness Doctrine. But with regard to media,
yep.
But with regard to corporations in general, that collapsed during an era called the chartermongering era in the late 1890s. And it was the result of the state of Ohio telling John Rockefeller they were going to put him in jail if he kept engaging in illegal monopoly activity. And Rockefeller reached out to the other states and said, who wants to change their corporate charter laws so that I can legally do business in your state? And kicked off a competition between Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, and Delaware that ultimately New Jersey won for Rockefeller. Delaware became the laxest of all the states in terms of corporate charters, which is right why more than half of the New York Stock Exchange companies are incorporated in Delaware.
Interesting. And okay, and I always thought that credit card companies were incorporated in Delaware, but you say is it North Dakota?
The reason why, and you know, one of the things that you'll hear from Republicans right now about health insurance is that health insurance companies should be able to sell their products across state lines.
Right.
And what that does is it cuts out of the loop state insurance regulators who protect consumers in their states. And it used to be that way with banks. And in the, I believe it was in the 70s, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was in the Nixon years. He blew up the usury laws in the United States, but also what we did was we said it's legal for banks to operate across state lines. And the result of that was the absolute destruction of local banks. Mm. You know, it used to be every state had their own, you know, their own local banks. Wells Fargo was entirely California, for example. And whichever state had the lowest regulatory standards, sort of like with the chartermongering with Rockefeller, that was the state that the banksters were looking for, at least with regard to credit cards. And so what happened was North Dakota came up and basically said, you know, you can screw customers all day long. You can charge obscene amounts of interest. You know, we're not going to regulate you. And so if you look on the back of your credit card, pretty much any kind of credit card, you'll find that the credit card division of that bank that issued that credit card is incorporated in North Dakota.
Wow. Wow. You know, the subject of the book is monopolies. And what one thing, one weird phenomenon that we've witnessed during this pandemic when a lot of businesses, most businesses shut down for a while, some are coming back, but some stayed open. Those were the essential businesses. And for some reason, it seems like it was a lot of the big box stores. It's the big monopolies that are not only surviving, but are flourishing, are exploding in terms of income and wealth and market share, putting a lot of the little guys out of business because they can't survive this, but the monopolies are living on. I can't imagine that was an intended consequence of this. I can't, but it seems to be what's playing out anyway. We're seeing Amazon getting bigger than ever. We're seeing, again, the monopolies are just growing. Don't we have protections in place against monopolies? Wasn't that what broke up AT&T into all the baby bells some, you know, how many, 20, 30 years ago?
Yeah, Richard Nixon started that. Jimmy Carter finished it. And that was the last antitrust enforcement that had been taken in a big way in the United States, period, full stop. Because, in 1890, we had the Sherman Antitrust Act. In the 1930s, you had the Clayton Trust Act, which expanded and strengthened the Sherman Act. And then in, I think it was 1956, it was called the Antitrust Act of 1956, that strengthened the Clayton Act. And those protected small businesses in America. I write in the book about how in 1960, this TV show came out that absolutely fascinated me. I was 9 years old at the time. And it was called Route 66. Marty Milner and George Maharis every week would you know, they were driving their Corvette from New York City to Los Angeles. And the only way to get there, this was before the Eisenhower Highway System was completed, the only way to get there was to go on Route 66, which was a two-lane highway, what today we'd call a rural back road, mm-hmm. that went, you know, all the way across the country. And every week they were in a different town. And you could always tell what town they were in. You know, if they were in Biloxi, Mississippi, there was the Biloxi Diner and the Biloxi Hotel and the Biloxi Bay. And these were all locally owned businesses, or they were named after families, and they'd mm-hmm. been in families for generations. And so in 1982, 83, when Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act and its followers, you know, basically ordering the Department of Justice, the Department of Commerce, and the Securities and Exchange Commission to no longer enforce the antitrust laws of the United States, what happened was this explosion called the mergers and acquisitions mania, the M&A mania of the 1980s. Michael Milken was the most famous, you know, one of those guys, but there was a bunch of them. And they called themselves the masters of the universe. And they would take, you know, there's five or six different, you know, fill in the blank, airlines, hotels, restaurant chains, whatever it may be, that were competing with each other. Each one had its own HR department. Each one had its own salespeople. Each one had its own accounting department. Each one had its own, you know, marketing department. And by jamming them all together in one company, you could lay off enormous numbers of employees by consolidating those functions, make them, quote, more efficient, and wipe out any possibility of small or medium-sized competitors. So, you know, back prior to the 1980s, like in 1979, if you were to jump out of an airplane at 90,000 feet and just land in any random place in America, you could very quickly figure out where you were, you know, the same way I could when I watched Route 66. Mm-hmm. By 1988, 89, 90, you know, into the 90s, and certainly today, if you jumped out of a plane and landed in any random city in America, you'd have no friggin' idea where you were.
Right.
Because, oh, there's an Olive Garden, and there's a
Walmart.
There's a Walmart, yep. Exactly, and there's a Marriott, and a McDonald's, and all the local flavor is gone. But it's not just being reminiscent, you know, being nostalgic about local flavor. Those were small businesses. That was the vitality of America. And the business also, money also circulated in local communities. If you know, you got a job and you spent money at the local diner bought their food from the local farmer.
Sure.
You know, they might have bought their plates from a company in the state that made plates, I mean, et cetera, et cetera. The money stayed local. Now, when we get, you know, our income from our job or stimulus from the federal government, we go to Walmart and buy something, and within 24 hours, that money's in China. And that's why stimulus doesn't work now the way it used to. But it's, you know, it has created so many bizarre changes in our business and political climate that it's, you know, monopoly is functionally destroying this country.
It is. But so is the Sherman Antitrust Act still on the books?
Yep.
It hasn't been repealed,
yep. We just
right?
have not had a president since 1982 who's been willing to enforce it.
Wow. I wonder, has anybody asked Joe Biden about his thoughts on antitrust legislation?
Not to the best of my knowledge.
No.
Good question.
You know,
I'm willing to suck it up until after the election, yes. No matter what.
Again, I'm with you. I'm in the boat of first order of business, remove Donald Trump. Then we get down. Exactly. Stop the fascists. Get rid of the guy who wants to kill us. And then we can deal with, you know, fighting Joe Biden. And we're going to have a lot of fights on our hands with Joe Biden. But I'll leave that until after Trump is out of there. Because the bigger issue right now is getting him out. I can't believe the stuff that's going on. I'm sorry, Tom. I'm a little off today because of what's going on in Wisconsin. And I'm shocked about the arrest of this 17-year-old boy who came over from Antioch, Illinois with an assault rifle, I guess with the intention of killing people. And he did. And there was video.
Really based on a Facebook group that was calling, yes, for people to come.
That's
come,
right.
You know, shoot these people. And you know, the police gave him water.
They
and
gave
said,
him,
we're glad you're here.
I played that video. And then after he shot them, as he's walking towards the cops, you know, with their sirens blaring, with his hands up, they're saying, get out of the way, get out of the way.
Right. We're going after some black people here.
Exactly. I'm stunned. So this kid was arrested in Antioch, Illinois today. And the sheriff or the police chief of Kenosha, Wisconsin, used some word salad to say the shooter tried to rectify the situation using a fire. It's like, what? He killed two people. I'm right. just, I'm just,
I'm stu-
so, Yeah, and injured, and mortally injured a third. I just can't believe this stuff is still going on. And then we watch the propaganda session that's happening, you know, every night this week from the White House of all places. And they're, you know, it's us. We're the bad guys. We're the ones, you know, bringing violence to the streets. It's just opposite world, and it's frightening. And that's why it's so important to get Trump out of there. But so I'm sorry. I'm a bit. You know, preoccupied with the videos I just watched. But so back to the book, though, Tom Hartman, The Hidden History of Monopolies, How Big Business Destroyed the American Dream. You know, we mentioned Walmart a little earlier. Walmarts were considered, or still are, I guess, essential services, and they are also prospering during this pandemic. Then we look at what's going on with social media. Now, there's I don't believe any antitrust legislation has ever been used against, say, Facebook. But Facebook, we've learned, you know, when they're met with competition that I guess is encroaching on their territory, they just buy it. Like they bought Instagram. Mark Zuckerberg was asked that about that when he testified before Congress, but nothing was done. Shouldn't Facebook be broken up? Shouldn't Amazon be broken up? Because these seem like huge monopolies that just keep getting bigger and bigger and more powerful that don't seem to be serving the people well.
Yeah, I agree. Mark Zuckerberg is basically using the same strategy that John Rockefeller did back in the 1880s, 1890s. Rockefeller would go to his small competitors and say, you know, I'm going to run you out of business, but here's an alternative. I'll give you some stock in the Standard Oil Trust in exchange for you giving me your company, and we'll both get rich. You won't get as rich as me, but you know, we'll both get rich. That's essentially what Rockefeller said to these people, and you know, bought them out. And that's how he built this. You know, he ended up controlling 90% of the oil industry in the United States. And that's how Zuckerberg has ended up controlling, you know, a large chunk of the social media industry in the United States.
Absolutely. And then looking at something like Amazon and watching how it's grown over the years. And we learned for the first, I don't know how many years, for the first number of years that Amazon was in business, Jeff Bezos was hemorrhaging money. He lost a lot of money, similar to Fox so-called News. When they first started, it was a loss leader. They were losing money until they got to the point, I don't know, critical mass, where all of a sudden they're everywhere. And now they're making money hand over fist, and nobody else comes close. These are examples of monopolies, are they not?
I'm not sure you could argue that Fox is a monopoly, right. But they did lose money for 5 years, almost $100 million. And, you know, with Amazon, the thing that makes them essentially monopolistic is that they span multiple industry niches, and now and increasingly they control the main platform that's used for retail commerce in the United States, you know, which is their platform. It's Amazon itself, and in each one of the market sectors that they've gone into in a big way, they start putting the smaller competitors out of business very effectively. They did this first with books, and now it's product after product, and now with their video offerings.
That's right. It's a whole movie studio.
You know, most people who look at this and say it should be broken up suggest that, you know, they should divest themselves of each one of these various divisions or these, you know, product categories. And, you know, Jeff Bezos would actually end up richer at the end of that product, just like when Nixon and Carter broke up the big, you know, AT&T.
Right.
You own stock in AT&T before the breakup. After the breakup, you ended up owning stock in seven companies plus Bell Labs. Your stock was actually worth more than it was before the breakup. Wow. And that would happen with Amazon as well.
Right. And now you look at AT&T now, and it's AT&T, bigger than the original was, right? Now they've got DirecTV, and they've got the cell phone company, and they've got this and that. It's bigger than the original AT&T that was broken up in the 80s. So it just seems like an ugly cycle that keeps repeating itself, mostly because our government does not enforce the laws. You know, one of the things that I love about your books, Tom Hartman, is that you, in addition to laying out the history and telling us how we got to where we are, you offer solutions. And some of the solutions you offer, I mean, one of them, like we've just been discussing, break up the internet giants. Google is another example. It's so funny because this is such a short period of history. I remember When I first heard about Google, it was a search engine. And, you know, I was on the air. I was doing music.
You were
radio.
All using Alta Vista back then.
Right, right. And, CompuServe and things like that.
AOL,
right. And I remember I was doing music radio in Los Angeles, and the local Channel 5 Morning News used to do a surf report. And I still remember the day that they said, there's this new search thing. It's called Google. And you Google, and now look at it. It's like Google is everywhere. So break up the internet giants. What would it take to break up the internet giants? Somebody, Congress writing new legislation?
It would just take an administration that was willing to enforce the law. It doesn't require any action from Congress.
Wow. So that's all just enforce the existing law right now. Ban preemptive laws written by corporations. Does this have anything to do with, say, ALEC, who corporations write model legislation for ALEC, or did, and then it goes directly to the state reps who put it through?
Alex certainly has promoted a bunch of preemptive laws, but basically what preemption is we saw a great example of this in Texas just a little while ago, where Greg Abbott, the governor, made a law, essentially. I'm not sure if it was passed by their legislature. I think it was an executive action, but he was authorized by law to do it, where he said that if he made a rule that you couldn't force people to wear a mask, that any city that tried to pass a city council resolution requiring people to wear masks was overruled.
Right.
And so states have used this to force local communities to, a lot of local communities around the United States have come up with their own environmental rules. They've tried to ban fracking. They've tried to ban kinds of pollution that would poison their own local water supply. They've tried to ban things like giant hog farms or waste treatment plants that would pollute the community. And in case after case after case, the states pass laws preempting local authority to do that. And it's gotten vicious. And it's not healthy.
Right. Oh, boy. And we don't realize how much influence, I mean, the average person, I'm saying the royal we here, how much influence businesses have over government
actors.
Well,
a lot of the preemption laws started in a big way, you know, back in the 90s with local communities trying to ban Walmarts.
Wow. Interesting. That's very interesting. One of your solutions is bring back the corporate death penalty. That goes back to what we were discussing earlier when I mentioned corporations had to be good citizens, prove that they were good corporate citizens in order to have their charter approved, right? And then, and when they were first granted, they were granted for a finite period of time, usually about 10 years, right? And to get it renewed, they had to prove something similar to serving the public interest, convenience, and necessity, right?
That's right. That's right. And we really should go back to that. But at the very least, we need to bring back the corporate death penalty, you know, whether it's directly done or whether it's indirectly done. And the reason why is because when you break up big corporations, what you're really doing, yes, there will be people who lose their jobs, but what you're doing is creating an opportunity for entrepreneurs and small businesses to step into that space. And when you have a whole bunch of small businesses or medium-sized businesses operating in a particular market niche, they will, because they're less efficient than a giant corporation, they will end up actually employing more people
sure.
than the giant corporation did. It's the reverse process of what I was talking about before with mergers and acquisitions. And so, you know, it's a good thing, basically.
It really
is. And you could do it, you know, by neglect as well. For example, when the COVID virus hit, you know, when the coronavirus hit, you know, the instinct of government was to protect the big banks, protect the big airlines, protect all these giant corporations.
Still are, yeah.
Well, you know, the simple fact of the matter is if they hadn't bailed out United and American and those airlines had gone under, that would have opened up a huge space. I mean, you know, in the United States before Reagan, we had dozens of airlines.
That's right.
You know, there were lots of them. There were regional airlines. There was all kinds of competition. Now there isn't because it's been monopolized. If we were to not have, you know, bailed out the big banks either in 2009 yep. or last year or this year, rather, had we not bailed them out, they would have failed. And what would have happened stepping into that space? I mean, we would have kept the depositors good. That's what FDIC is all about. Mm-hmm. Stepping into that space would be small, local, and regional banks. And again, it would be better for the economy. It would be better for America.
Absolutely. And I bring it back to broadcasting because that's the business I've worked in for over 40 years. And I've watched it change since, you know, my first radio job in 1979, where it used to be, you know, one company could own one AM, one FM, one TV in a market with a max of seven of each, I believe. And now they can own seven stations in a single market. They can own eight, actually. And the jobs disappeared. It's probably a reason why I'm happy doing what I'm doing now, but it would be nice to, you know, work at a station and make a salary again, you know, be able to, you know, pay the bills. Those jobs just don't exist because they're these big corporations, the Clear Channels, which I know Clear Channel is no longer Clear Channel, but when you own over 800 radio stations, you consolidate jobs. And now a job used to be one program director for one radio station, and now you could have one for the eight in the market or one for even more. I just read about Entercom, who on World Radio Day or National Radio Day, whatever, earlier this week, had another round of massive layoffs, and they fired program directors. How do you run a radio station without a program director? But that's where we've come. And when everything after the consolidation era destroyed everything, it looked like all the stations were going to start to be sold off again. And I thought, okay, now we'll return to mom and pop radio where it used to be. But that never happened.
No, it's giant companies passing them back and forth
and
sucking them dry, which is what Bain Capital did with Clear Channel, which is why they've reinvented as iHeartMedia.
Yeah, it's really sad. I mean, we've seen the media landscape decimated. But the good news is this whole cottage industry of podcasting and online webcasting has grown out of it. But, you know, I watched the industry that I loved and worked in for four decades destroyed. And it's because it became monopolistic. So you're sounding a warning here. Hopefully it falls on ears who can do something about it. Do you have confidence that some of the newer Democrats who are coming into office may bring with it a changing tide?
I think there's a fairly broad understanding, certainly among progressives, but I think even among, you know, the more corporate Democrats, that this is an unsustainable system that is at its core hostile to a well-functioning free enterprise economic system and a well-functioning democratic republic.
Is there anybody on the horizon that you're particularly excited about? Any candidate like a Cori Bush or a Kara Eastman or a Jamal Bowman in New York? Somebody who's now coming up, one of these great progressives who won a primary that we were told they could never win. I've got great hopes for them because right now it's all we've got. I just grasp at straws. But I am seeing this energy out there that I'm hoping will bring with it some more progressive energy. Do you see anybody who's capturing your imagination?
Yeah. And I don't have a specific name for you or names, but, you know, the list that you just went through, I love. You know, I'm a big fan of the squad and others. I think the big lesson for us out of 2018 is that those candidates who ran as unabashed progressives were more likely to win, regardless of who they were running against, whether it was in a primary or a general, than were those candidates who were, you know, running on a platform of same old, same old.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, and I think even the Trump candidacy, 4 years ago, showed the weakness of our current system. You know, because he basically said the system is rigged and you're getting screwed. And everybody was like, yeah, you're right. And then, of course, he came into office and rigged it even more heavily in favor of very rich people.
Are you watching any of the RNC?
I have to.
Yeah. I know. It's hard.
I'm having to smoke a lot of pot.
I'm right there with you. We'll do it virtually across the country. One last question I got to ask with everything that's now going on in Kenosha. How are things in Portland right now?
Well, you would never know that there was a problem here. I mean, the whole thing was dying down before Trump sent in his stormtroopers, and even when he did, and it was, you know, at the top of the news every night all across the country, it was three city blocks that were involved, and you know, if you didn't live in one of those three city blocks, you didn't know what was going on, and you know, it's Trump is doing everything he can to reinvent 1968.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know if it's because Roger Stone is advising him and he used to advise Nixon. Uh-huh. But in 68, you know, in the summer of 68, Martin Luther King was assassinated. And as a result, the cities were on fire in the fall of 68. And Nixon used that and basically pointed to that and said, those, you know, black people burning down their cities, et cetera, you know, you need me, law and order. And so, you know, Trump doesn't have that, but he's trying to create it. And he's yelling law and order. It's just the replay of 68 Nixon. And the question is, you know, is he going to get away with it? How many Americans are going to fall for it? It seems to sell very well in the Fox world.
Yeah, I know. Be afraid, be very afraid is the message he's selling. And he's got his militias going out to foment chaos where there are peaceful protesters.
And, as they did in Kenosha last night.
As they did in Kenosha last night. Tom Hartman, always a pleasure. Find Tom Hartman, of course, on your radios anywhere at noon Eastern weekdays. And, of course, the new book is The Hidden History of Monopolies, How Big Business Destroyed the American Dream. Tom, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Nicole. Thanks for having me.
You take care. Bye-bye. And you, I'll see you tomorrow. Howie Klein will be here. It's Thursday. Bye.